gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Some fresh jingles are here for me this morning. Good. Mike and Raleigh, see, you guys were in such a bad mood yesterday. I thought I'd give everyone a little present.
The Stephanie Miller Show!
Oh, awesome. Yay. I feel much better. But wait, there's more. Hang on a minute. Thank you, Mike.
Lunch, wine, drinking, radio slang, Stephanie Miller.
Thank you.
Oh, dear.
That sounds old-timey and fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of things. The show are fun and make me happy today. Aisha Tyler will be calling in hour number 3 to promote Sexy Liberal coming up in Santa Fe this weekend, and then Detroit, August 20th. Ari Berman of The Nation, Representative Elliot Engel.
Yeah, all great people.
Well, what makes me happier?
None greater.
Than someone that tells Republicans to stop fragging her
exactly.
On the House floor. The rocking congresswoman from the great state of Illinois, Representative Jan Schakowsky. Good morning,
Hi,
Representative.
Good morning.
Good morning. You were on fire on the House floor.
I was on fire.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah.
I don't. Well, you speak for a lot of us. And I first of all, got to say, what a moment with Gabrielle Giffords yesterday.
You know, it was sort of odd, too, because, you know, here's this... you know, holding our feet to the fire. Is the Republic going to fall and partisan divide? And then in walks Gabby Gifford, and it was this, I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the House floor.
Yeah.
Republicans and Democrats were so happy.
Yeah. What, I mean, seriously, what a moment. And voted for the bill, urged bipartisanship, obviously. I mean, what's your take, Congressman? I know you know, obviously we're not happy with this bill. It's since then, it's interesting. I have seen analysis even from our side of the aisle on both sides, you know, everywhere from, you know, people I respect like Paul Krugman to Randy Rhodes to Lawrence O'Donnell. What is your take on this, on what just happened?
Well, you know, we couldn't, you know, I agree that we could not let the country go into default. The consequences are just so catastrophic. Although clearly some of the Republicans were more than willing to do it, and that I think it was a serious threat. So the agreement is just lousy.
Yeah.
The fact that nothing, not a hair on the head of a millionaire or billionaire is touched in terms of contributing to the dramatic debt reduction that this bill calls for. And the fact that it will exacerbate the real crises that we have right now, which jobs crisis, foreclosure crisis, the disappearing middle class crisis, the income disparity crisis that we have in this country. All of those things are going to be made worse. We need the economy to grow right now. This bill will not help that. It takes us in the wrong direction.
Right. Congressman, let me ask you something you started with. That, you know, and I know we're all armchair quarterbacks now and woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know. But when you say, you know, they were serious, isn't, because I do find myself thinking, should we have demanded a clean debt ceiling vote? And would they really have just sent the country into default if the president and the Democrats had just said, no, we are just going to, you know, raise the debt limit. We are not linking these two issues. What would they, I mean, what's your take on that?
You know, well, we had a vote on that in the House. Of course, it failed, but most of the Democrats voted for that. Some. I voted for it. We had about 130 co-sponsors of a new bill that said, just a couple weeks ago, that said, let's just have a clean debt ceiling vote. I think at some point, much earlier in the season, had there been just a clear statement from the Democrats in Congress and the president that we're just not going to fool around with this. This is too serious.
Well, but I agree with you. When you look at some of your Tea Party friends over there, you go, I guess they would have. Some of them are actively rooting for default. I guess, you know, when you go, oh, what if we'd called their bluff?
Some of them were. I think their view goes way beyond let's have less spending. This is seriously about bringing the public sector down, bringing the government down. They are anti-government.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's no hooks on them because some of them don't seem to even care if they're reelected. So there's nothing that could have changed their mind.
Let me, you know, you're obviously our friend Debbie Wasserman Schultz tweeted, Dems protected Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, secured balance with defense cuts, set stage for more balanced plan, won the day with compromise. Do you agree with any part of that?
Well, I hope that she's right, but, you know, the committee that's going to be formed actually could, in the first round, could go after Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and if that committee doesn't agree on cuts, then there's an automatic process that allows Medicare cuts to be made, particularly for providers.
But to providers, not to recipients, to doctors,
you know,
and insurance companies and hospitals.
Well, here's my concern, though. You know, we're concerned about access. You know, I don't want to cave in just to doctor demands either. But if we cut those payments to doctors too low, they just say, forget it. We're not going to enroll any more Medicare beneficiaries. We're seeing that in some places. So obviously we need to work with those providers. Not all of them are just, trying to make a big buck. Some of them just want to get paid for what they're doing.
Right.
And we make big cuts in provider payments already in the health reform bill.
Right. I mean, you know what, as I say, it's interesting, isn't it, when even on your own side of the aisle, people you respect, really, I've heard, have totally differing opinions on this. Nate Silver over at 538.com, he said, you know, he talked about if you read the fine print that it's better for Democrats than at first glance. He says, first, the timing, the cuts are heavily backloaded, so the deal's unlikely to have much direct effect on the economy in 2012. Obviously, there are things in there that a lot of people like, right, in the sense that, talking points memo. Let me just read you that one. Get your take. Let me get this straight. The president kept revenues on the table, did not touch the sunset provisions in the Bush tax cuts, ensured that the military cuts keep the GOP honest, protected Medicare by adding in only provider cuts in the trigger, made the reduction apparently enough to stave off a debt downgrade, got the debt ceiling raised, wounded Boehner by demonstrating to the world that he's controlled by the Tea Party caucus, took out a requirement that the balanced budget amendment be passed and sent to the states, and got the extension through 2012. What exactly is wrong with this deal?
Well, you know, that's a good one to take on the stump in defense of the president. But I do think the fact that we're focusing now on major dramatic cuts in the budget. He says that Nate said that they're backloaded. But that's the wrong crisis to be looking at. Right now, we actually should be spending money. We need to create more jobs. We have to build growth. You know, it's not just about cuts to spending or revenue increases. It's about growth in the economy. And you don't get it by slashing the budget.
Well,
and so, I'm worried that it's going to take us economically in the wrong direction.
No, I hear you. And that, I think, you know, you and I agree with Krugman on that, you know, the stimulus should have been bigger and this is exactly the wrong time to cut, you know. But, it is interesting, Congresswoman, listening to you talk about the reality of what you guys are up against. I am, like I say, hearing a lot of commentators say they're not sure how much better the president could have done faced with this particular Congress in particular.
You know, that actually may be wrong. Right. And, if it had come down to a tie vote, I would not have let the country go into default. But I did not want to put my name on a deal that I think does, in fact, imperil our social safety net in a significant way, and does not increase revenues on the people that can most afford it, and doesn't do anything to address what we really need to be looking at now. And hopefully we're going to pivot now to jobs. I'm going to be introducing a bill that hires a bunch of people, creates 2 million plus jobs. We're working on it, as we speak. And we'll see if we can get buy-in from enough people who understand that if we don't put people back to work, the economy is not going to get better.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I'm a happy, clappy liberal, as you know, but I have got to remain hopeful that, you know, I think that when you look at a lot of this overreach and the recalls going on, and you look at the polling and how Americans are largely on our side in all these issues, I am hopeful, actually, about the next election cycle. Are you?
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to add some spirit to the Democrats. That's going to be my goal over the recess here and, you know, going forward, that we're going to be able to create the intensity that more than matches that of the goofy Tea Party people. And, you know, so I think it's going to be that factor that's going to be most important.
Yeah.
We're going to have to rally our troops.
Yeah. Congresswoman, what is your take on the Bush tax cuts? I mean, I'm hopeful that as part of this deal, we will get revenue eventually, that they will sunset. What do you think?
Well, the president has said that over and over and over again. I talked to the White House yesterday. They are absolutely committed to either that or significant tax reform that does make
right.
the tax code fairer. He's allowed for either one of those.
Loopholes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cutting loopholes, you know, even changing tax brackets so that the very rich don't pay nothing, for example.
Yes, for example.
I believe that that's a commitment, and I'm, we all have to support the president in that effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what I, that's all I'm saying is let's not get disheartened. Let's fight back against,
right.
as you say, these Tea Party goofies, in the words of Jen Schakowsky.
Right.
All right. Congresswoman, you rock, as always. Thanks for checking in on such a big day.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right, there she goes. Love.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, did you see listeners sent me a lot of ammunition against you naysaying mooks? Bastard people. Listen,
I'm quite reasonable. It's that
it's
one.
It's him. It's Mr. It's, Negative over there.
Yeah, Paul Krugman. I didn't come armed with Paul Krugman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See? He wouldn't even care that I just said that. He would care that I pronounced it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish Randy Rhoads' show was on before mine so I know what to say.
Oh, my God. She listens.
I'm drinking. I don't read as much as she does.
Does she listen to you to find out what to say?
Yeah, that's how she knows it's 19 after.
Okay.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-1-2. Stephanie Miller. I want to do bad things.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh, I'm armed with new facts and new jingles.
Ha
ha! Oh, loaded for bear, Jim Ward, if you're on your way in.
Ensures that the
Oh, excuse me. All right. Yes, I have another
jingle. Liberal Stephanie Miller.
You cut that off.
I know.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right, you're fired.
Sexy liberal Stephanie Miller.
Thank you.
Okay.
Eh.
Yeah.
All right. And Karen writes, Chris and Jim.
What?
No less liberal constitutional authority than Irwin Chemeninsky. How do you say his name? Chemeninsky.
And he's with?
He's the constitutional authority. He's on TV all the time. Irwin Chemeninsky, constitutional expert.
I don't watch MSNBC, so.
He's not just on MSNBC.
Okay.
Says the 14th Amendment won't work. If he and another constitutional scholar, Barack Obama, feel that it won't work, I tend to go with them. FYI, if you elect a moderate, don't expect a radical. There! So there!
I never...
Everyone's like, he should have done...
No. No.
He should have...
Remember, I very famously said he shouldn't use the 14th Amendment.
All right, I take a lot of my stress about Jim out on you.
Yeah, I know you do. I got a lot of crap for saying that he shouldn't use the 14th Amendment. I'll have you know.
You know, you just take it out on whoever's there.
Yeah.
He's not here yet.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
1-800.
When is he coming back in at 6 again?
Soon. I'm scraping together the spare change.
Yeah.
Joe in Spokane, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Joe.
Good morning, guy and gal.
Yes.
Hey, I wanted to do a little Harry Reid imitation for you, and here's how it goes.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Harry Reid, and I'm angry, and I'm gonna draw a line in the sand because you know I used to be a boxer and I'm angry. God, I tell you, man,
that's very good. Yeah, I'm surprised they blinked.
Yeah,
that guy. You know, I feel like I've been ripped off by the Republicans and sold out by the Democrats.
But here's the thing, Joe. Like, I don't know if you listened to just talking to Congresswoman Schakowsky. I woke up with that fantasy today too. I thought, What if we had just forced them to blink, just said, clean bill, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You send the country into default. The problem is, you're right, the president and Democrats care too much But was it the, you know? Well, and that's the problem is with these Tea Party crazies, they might have. I mean, that's the problem. I can't go back and be them now, you know.
Well, you know, we're at a point of total corruption with our government, and I don't know what to do about it. I'm 60 years old. I've seen a lot of people come and go, and it just seems like every time we get a little further into being very corrupt, and it's sad. I love the country, but, boy, it's sad. Hey, you guys have a great day.
All right, you too, honey. All right, he'll take no further questions. Yeah. Okay. All right, let me, you know, any subject line that says why the mooks are wrong, again.
Wait a minute.
That goes right to the top of my inbox. This is from Ian.
Is this both mooks or just one mook that you're taking out on me?
Doesn't matter. You're all interchangeable.
Oh, good.
You're all interchangeable
great.
Baggage that weighs me down.
Great.
Makes my life living hell. cut off jingles in the middle.
Yeah, that. Well,
can't even
I
push the
about
buttons
that.
Right.
Right. I know.
Right? Are you even here?
I have no idea. All right. I'm leaving.
I love you.
Bye.
All right. I'm just gonna take everything out on you, and then I'll feel so much better. Okay. Boy. Well, I shouldn't have done that. Ego. All right. Hello, all that. Oh, you're still here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You're kidding. Hello, all. The Tea Party did not win, quote unquote, because of today's deal. This is yesterday. This is not some sort of surrender on Obama's part. I'm just saying that other people are allowed to have other opinions.
I know,
this
right?
This is not a threat. This is not some sort of surrender on Obama's part, abject or otherwise. Look, the Tea Party wanted one thing. They wanted not to have the debt ceiling raised at all, not by a single dollar. That's true, a lot of them. They lost to the tune of a couple trillion. The non-Tea Party Republican leadership wanted a couple of things. Primarily, they wanted to gut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That's not going to happen. Secondarily, they wanted to limit the time period on any deal so they would have a couple more of these standoffs before the next election. Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in 6 months, even. That also is not going to happen. As a last resort, they at least wanted to solidify in voters' minds that they are the party of fiscal responsibility, the sane and sober party that wants to do what's best for the country's finances. According to all the polls, even that's not going to happen. So the Republican leadership lost on all points. I think Obama took a horrendously bad situation and made the best he could out of it and made the Republicans look like a bunch of fools in the process. Now, about the only thing that could take this sort of victory and turn it into a defeat, after all, is a bunch of high-profile progressive commentators should unaccountably start wailing and gnashing their teeth about how huge and humiliating a defeat this was. Tell people that often enough and loud enough, and they will believe it. P.S., one more thing. Of course, Krugman is right about the economic Krugman stupidity of these cuts, but as usual, he's disastrously long on the political implications of the deal. If we lived in a dictatorship, policy and politics could be synonymous, but as we live in a society specifically designed to force compromise and not really very well designed for having one of the people at the compromising table be bug nuts crazy. All right. Thank you, Ian. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Bad hair, weird nose, thick neck.
She shook my hand with the fingertips. What are you, the Queen of France?
Her face made me want to learn how to box.
Man, there's a lot of love in this room.
It's exactly like this room.
Yeah.
It is the extent. What's my favorite threat when you piss me off?
I don't.
I'm going to punch you in the throat.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never actually done it.
I know. I get that threat like at least 3 times a day.
Made you flinch.
Yeah.
1-800 still. Step 1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. I needed something to cheer me up after yesterday. And Mike and Raleigh has sent me, what, a new Guy Lafleur jingle?
Yeah.
What's more fun than that?
Guy Lafleur, our Park Sheboygan.
Yay.
My three favorite words.
Yay.
Oh, and then you sent me your new obsession, Eric Cantor's bitchface.
Tumblr.com. Yeah, it's a Tumblr blog. Oh, my God, is it funny.
He is a whiny little bitch. He really does. You know, he always has a little bitch face.
Yeah.
He's always, little twits always standing right behind Boner.
And the little thing, things that they write underneath each picture. I'm going to post it on your Facebook page right now.
Okay, please do that, won't you? He does. He has a different little bitch face for every news conference. All right, 1-800, step 1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Let's go to, where are we? Teresa in Chicago. Hi, Therese.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I really, really enjoy this show. I listen to it every morning.
Thank you.
But, you know, I just have one question because I'm really confused. I love going through my civics 101 because I don't think America has been dealing with government like this ever. But I'm just confused. Can the president go in there and do whatever he want to do?
No, he cannot.
I mean, that's what I don't understand. And And you know, the other thing I just want to make one quick point is that we really need to be careful as far as the progressives are concerned with our rhetoric. I think one thing about Republicans, they stay on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we come after the president, I really think this is the rhetoric that really made us lose the midterm election.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, as you know, people like me and Randy Rhodes are on one side of this divide. And you know, it's I agree with you that I think you know, that's what we need to do is get mad and get even with these Tea Party.
Really, because you know, everybody know the president truly have the Americans people best interest at heart. I mean,
yep.
and everybody knows what he's up against. But one of the thing is, I just think a lot of us progressives and the talk show hosts need to deal with the issue on what he's really dealing with. And I hate to say, but it's racism. I think they, instead mm-hmm. of dealing with that blatant, hardcore fact, is
yep.
that they want to blame it on the president
yep.
and not
you know,
acknowledge what
Teresa,
what
I'm
this
not
is all about.
Right, absolutely. I'm not one to play the race card, but you've heard me say this maybe many times, that I just have not seen this in my lifetime, this kind of disrespect, this kind of demanding a man's birth certificate, yelling you lie at the President of the United States. And I'm sorry, I think you're absolutely right, that it, not in all cases, but in some cases, you can't. What is different? It's the first black man we've had is in the Oval Office.
Really, I just want to make, and when you think about all the things, the good things he has done, oh my God, nobody even acknowledged that.
You know what, Teresa? I think I'm making a new rule on the show. I'm not letting anyone call except other angry black women like me.
Okay.
What
I'm
talking about.
To say that. We just really need to be careful.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can get him in next year and deal with all the problems that we're going through now.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Teresa. That's what I'm talking about. Me and Tony in L.A. Sisters doing it for themselves. That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to talk to Aisha Tyler later. Listen, did you notice yesterday it was all angry black women and me? That was it.
Yeah, you had a neck thing going, you know.
Listen, don't not make me...
Wait, are you trying
ow,
to do it?
Ow, ow,
wait a
I'm
minute.
Too old for that. Ow.
No, you were doing white girl neck. You need to do black girl neck.
I hurt myself. Ah, all right. Nate Silver, fine American. Julie writes, Steph, Nate Silver of 538 fame says the debt deal is not as bad as people think it is. Most of the cuts come later. They are likely to be at least half defense cuts, which normal humans, as opposed to Republicans, should be happy about. Yeah, there are good things in here, and that's, you know, because mm-hmm. that's the problem. A lot of people on both sides, the base is just like, no! That's my point, is I'm just saying,
I would like a little revenue. A little
well,
revenue.
Well, a lot of people think we will get that in the Bush tax cuts.
Let's hope if, so.
If Democrats read the fine print, and this is Nate Silver.
Mm-hmm.
If Democrats read the fine print on the debt deal struck by President Obama and congressional leaders, they'll find it's a little better than it appears at first glance. First thing, the cuts are heavily backloaded, so the deal is unlikely to have much direct effect on the economy in 2012. The bill, in short, is not likely to have a profound effect on the recovery in the near term. Well, one narrow way to read the deal is that both sides got what they wanted. President Obama got an assurance the debt ceiling will be raised through the end of his first term. Republicans achieved their goals of avoiding tax increases and getting a dollar-for-dollar increase in spending cuts to match the amount the debt limit will be raised. But given that Democrats were willing to accede to the constraints demanded by Republicans, they were able to exert a lot of control over the substance of the cuts. See, here's the fine print.
Okay, yeah.
I don't read that because I am too drunk by that point in the evening.
Yeah.
But Nate Silver is not.
How do you know? Maybe he did this while drunk.
In particular, the first round of cuts will include $350 billion in defense savings, while the second round would include between $500 and $600 billion in defense cuts if no bipartisan agreement is reached. Although it's impossible to prove one way or the other, I am not persuaded by the notion that Mr. Obama could have delivered a better result to Democrats had he done more to stand his ground. I mean, that's what we keep hearing. Oh, he can't even stand his ground. And no, and this is what, you know, when you get down to it, constitutional scholars, a lot of them said no. He couldn't. I know it's movie manly, and oh, he should have done this, he should have done that. Or like I said to Congressman Schakowsky, should we have said clean debt deal, period? She said we did. That's how crazy these, mm-hmm. they're bug crazy. The Tea Partiers. They did. A lot of them wanted to fold. Michelle Bachmann, among others.
Bug nuts crazy, you said, yeah. Yeah.
Well, both.
Okay.
The fine print is not quite as bad for Democrats as the headline number of $2.5 trillion in spending cuts. That's why some Republicans are having trouble being sold on the deal as well as some Democrats. Randy was saying yesterday that Rush Limbaugh, that's how you know it's bad, because he was going crazy about it.
He was.
Because he understands that, you know, that's the problem. You know, this media storyline, we just react right away like, oh, it's bad for Democrats. Oh, they've caved. And then it's like you look at the fine print and you go, you know, the president might just be a little bit smarter. than some of us. Clearly me. Okay.
At least he drinks less wine than you.
Who doesn't? Tracy in California. Hi, Trace.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
You know, you just said exactly what I was calling for. I'm as confused as the next guy. I think it's a complicated bill. You know, and at first glance, I was irritated. But I sat there last night and I watched Lawrence O'Donnell and then again on Rachel's show. And they ran this poll, and I can't remember who the organization was that did this poll, but apparently they called people, and they asked them what was their first word that came to mind as they thought about this deal.
Right.
And then they post this graphic, you know, disgusting, idiot, all these negative words. And I sat there as that was going on, and I'm sitting there saying, now they're asking this question of Joe Electric. Now, you know, they haven't looked at the bill. They haven't read anything to actually know how this thing was going to play out. So I thought it was extremely irresponsible to report that as such a big story.
Right.
And I was more shocked that no one, especially Lawrence, even called what I'm saying, even said that. There it is.
Right.
You know, and I think that's incredibly irresponsible given everything that's going on. It's ridiculous, and it feeds into what your last caller said about this rhetoric we keep throwing out about what's going on, myself included. I'm guilty of it myself.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. I hadn't read through the fine print of it either, like Nate Silver did, and when you look at these triggers, you know, some of them are smart. Like I say, it forces them to make defense cuts, which they don't want to, you know, make, so it keeps them honest on that. I think, you know, and Tracy, I do think there is a good chance the Bush tax cuts are going to sunset. There's our revenue there. I think, you know, we need to... you know, first of all, just give it a minute and be glad that we have avoided worldwide financial catastrophe for a moment.
Exactly.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Trace. Yeah, see, that's what I mean. You shot Bin Laden in the eye. Okay. Good. All right. Well, that's done. Why didn't you shoot him in the left eye? Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we took the Somali pirate out with one shot. Oh, well, that's good. Oh, why didn't you? What? How much money did that bullet cost us? The president's a spend crazy socialist.
Kenyan.
Whatever. Okay.
I just added that.
Thanks.
Onto your list.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Amy in Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Aim.
Hey there. I was at your very first show in Madison.
Yay! Sexy liberal show! Woo! Party over there!
Mm-hmm. I'm your tallest blonde fan ever. I'm 6 foot tall. I think you may have remembered taking a photo with me and Hal, but...
Yes! Yes. Hello, tall blonde.
Yes, I had no problem seeing over the people in front of me at the show. So
yes.
But I wanted to say, based on the deal last night, because the Bush tax cuts just did not get touched, and, you know, I'm so angry about that. And the first thing I thought of when I woke up this morning is, why don't we just turn it on its head and call their bluff and make it a rebate that they get per job that they make?
Yeah, there you go. So they have to actually, you know, do something.
Yeah.
Accomplish something. Did you know that? So who was it we had on that did a great, like, every bill they've done?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing. Just, like, they're bills that just were against this, were against that. The stupid, what are they, I don't even know, even the names of the bills. They're things that, like, don't accomplish anything.
Right.
Except saying, we hate the stupid president. That's what it says.
That's not governing.
I'm paraphrasing the names of the bills, but they might as well be that.
The Hate the Stupid President bill?
Hate him stupid! Ken! Kenyon! Okay. Tony and all. I'm not as fine a purveyor of facts as Randy Rhodes. I get the feeling behind what the bills are. I don't know the details.
Yeah, that's one of the times where the wires slapping
stupid!
In your head didn't connect.
Hey, you! Okay. Hi. Hi, Tony. Tony in Ohio.
Hello. Hello again. Yeah, I want to add my voice to a bunch of other folks that have already called in to say that I don't think Obama caved. I don't think he blinked. I think he saved us from the hostage takers that would not only have been willing to see the economy go down the tube, they actually wanted it to go down the tube.
Well, Tony, that's exactly my point.
Who wants to fail.
That was my first question out of the chute to Congressman Schakowsky, who knows a little better than I do, or why didn't we do that? Could we have forced just a clean debt? And she said, no. We tried, you know. Like
they would have gleefully shot the hostage. You know, I want to tell you what I think about the Republican notions of compromise and negotiation are. And this is just the example. Okay, these are not my thoughts at all. But suppose... suppose I wanted to bash you on the side of the head with a brick, knock you down onto a table, rip off all your clothes, and have my way with you.
Well, hello.
Oh, dear.
You probably would not like to have that happen to you.
No.
So
no.
We'll compromise.
Well.
I'll just slap you upside with a little bit of a 2x4, tear off some of your clothes, and just molest you.
I was wondering if I could pick and choose if I could go to the second part. Don't look at me like that. Say we don't do the rock. Say you tell me I'm pretty instead.
And it's a compromise, and we've met in the middle, and everybody should be happy.
Yeah.
You know, don't you think that's
I know. No, that's what I mean. You know what David Vendor and I said? Next time, we're just going to... We're gonna shoot ourselves. You know what? Oh yeah, I'm the hostage. Like, just to make a point, just in the foot or something. Just, you know
ow!
What? You know what? You are not taking this hostage. I'm taking myself down. Ow! Now I can't walk. All right, I'm gonna be we're gonna be the I shot myself guy.
Oh yeah.
Our favorite internet guy. I just shot myself. What do you think of that, teabaggers?
You think they'd go for that?
Sure.
They wouldn't care.
All right. That was very violent imagery, that man.
Yeah, that was a little disturbing, and you were like, okay.
And I skipped right over to the good part.
What is
life,
wrong with you?
Relationships are compromised. 46 minutes after the hour. Oh, boy, my long, sad downward spiral continues. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is too weird, man.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This hour brought to you by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting, the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the try it free button, type in the promo code Stephanie. Be sure to use the promo code Stephanie. The President's carney yesterday.
This agreement ensures that the debt ceiling will be extended through 2012, removing that cloud of uncertainty from the economy.
Ha ha, take that, Eric Cantor, you little bitch face. Sorry, it's our new obsession. What's the name of it again? Oh, it's up on my Facebook page.
Eric Cantor's bitchface.tumblr.com.
See, Greg Sargent in the Washington Post, you know, the same thing I asked Congresswoman Schakowsky right out of the gate here. If Dems had refused to budge from the demand for a clean hike, would Republicans have blinked or would they have allowed default? The bottom line is Dems weren't prepared to take that risk, and the fast-approaching deadline meant moving to negotiations was imperative. Should Obama have waged a far more aggressive PR campaign to saddle the GOP with the potential blame for default? Maybe. But public opinion in recent days was running strongly for compromise and against Republicans, and they still continue the use of the threat of default as leverage. Could Dems have had more success with a more aggressive approach? We'll never know. Call it the road not taken. So that's, you know, in Congresswoman Schakowsky's opinion, no. They're just that bug crazy.
Yes.
Okay. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. Let's go to Eric in D.C. Hey, Eric, welcome.
Hey, Steph and the Mooks. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I wanted to just to give a little bit of a counter opinion. First of all, we do appreciate, and people keep saying people don't appreciate what Obama, President Obama has done, and the overturning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the extension of unemployment, and a lot of issues. He has done a lot of great things.
Well, and Eric, let me just say quickly, too, he's also averted a couple of, you know, Republican-caused giant catastrophes like a government shutdown and a default. I mean, it's you know, unfortunately, part of what he's had to do has been playing defense. So, you know, I think most economists agree he pulled us back from the brink of the Great Depression. You know, you're right. Can we take 1 second to say thank you for saving us from worldwide financial catastrophe?
Yeah, and absolutely. And in fact, you know, the most recent disaster, in fact, Osama bin Laden. But I digress just a bit.
Yeah.
Just a couple things I wanted to say about the president. I think he could have done better here. First of all, I think this whole argument, it's not the president's fault, but all these weeks we've spent talking about this false issue of the deficit, which, you know, is an issue, but it's something that's not critical right now because people are out of work. People are losing benefits. People, you know, the unemployment rate's probably 20% in real time. And I think we need to get the focus back on, and I think that's where the president made a mistake because he let the Tea Party pretty much run the show, and that's all we've been talking about all summer. And I think we need to get back to that, and I really think the president needs to stop attacking his base and ignoring his base, because at some point the base is going to say, you know, wait a minute, you know, third
yeah, but
party.
But see, I don't, Eric, I don't agree. It is, I don't read it as attacking his base or ignoring his base. I mean, you know, one thing that, you know, somebody was saying is this certainly, first of all, it forced, you know, what's his name, Boehner to, I mean, it is clear that he is run by the Tea Party, which the president has said, you know, and I think that's what has made this almost impossible negotiating.
Well, one real quick point before I go, I know you're busy, but I wanted to mention that the president, the president said a week ago, and he repeated several times in his, last Monday, he said that revenues had to be a part of this deal. He kept repeating that over and over, but he capitulated on that.
A lot of people think they are going to be in there with the Bush tax cuts, and that's, you know, that's the thing. Somebody was saying yesterday, Chris, like the president can't act like he's all happy.
Right.
You know,
he can't do a happy dance.
Yeah. As much as I'd like to see that.
I just hope that the revenues come through. I really do.
David in Washington State. Hello, Dave.
Hey. Hi. Good morning, Stephanie. Hello. Hey, you guys. Hey, you know, recalcitrant Republicans under Bush added $7 trillion to the debt from 2001 to 2008. The mainstream media, the network news, just drives me up the wall because on Sunday, David Gregory did not mention Bush's name once when he was describing 10 years of how we got to this, to the place that we're at.
Yeah.
I mean, he just went out of his way not to mention the B word.
Yep.
You know
yep.
what I mean? And so we're in three wars. And so for the Republicans to sit there and lecture all of us about fiscal, you know, responsibility is absurd.
Yep, I hear you. Salon.com, by the way, Obama didn't cave on the debt ceiling. I mean, you know, again, and it's not that we all aren't entitled to an opinion on our side, so I respect that. I'm just saying there are other opinions.
You don't respect Jim.
Sure, I do. If he does it in a funny voice, I'll listen to anything.
All right.
Okay. Let's go to Keith in Milwaukee. Hi, Keith. Welcome.
Hey, Steph, guys, it is an honor. Say, I want to be the official recall worker of the 8th Senate District in Wisconsin, please. Give me that,
so
Dan.
Done. Yes.
Anyhow, listen in on the call yesterday with the president, and the thing about him is it takes a lot of work to get this guy. But I think the implication is that, number one, we bought time, and number two, we need action at the grassroots. And what we have going on here in Wisconsin is really, I don't think it's reported enough, but there's a lot of energy going on with these recalls. People are working their beer calories off, going out, knocking on doors, doing canvassing. And if we pull this off next week, I think the timing is great in terms of this debt ceiling, because then we can start rolling across the country and start changing things. So, you guys out there, if you got money, send it out to Wisconsin and put it in the recalls.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. All right, honey. Thank you. Hey! Okay, Senator Harry Reid, yesterday...
This legislation is typical for compromise legislation. Neither side got what they wanted.
Everyone
but it's the essence of compromise. I'm told the House will be voting on this sometime this evening. I'm going to work to see if we can vote today. That's not all assured. But we're working on that.
9 o'clock Pacific, right?
For the Senate, yes.
Yes, for the Senate today. So that will obviously pass. All right. Let's give one more to Gabrielle Giffords. What a moment that was.
Yeah.
Voted for the bill, urged compromise. She's like, what the hell is going on around here since I've been gone?
You've let this place go to hell.
To hell. Thank God she's back. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. SexyLiberal.com, the Sexy Liberal Show website. Woohoo! Coming to Santa Fe, New Mexico this Saturday. Aisha Tyler joins the big tour in August. John Fugelsang on H. Tyler and I. Saturday, there might be some tickets for the matinee left. Not really sure. Mm-hmm. And then Detroit on August 20th. Very, very exciting. Speaking of exciting, we have new jingles.
What?
To make us all happier, Mike and Raleigh.
Chris Levert.
That's it.
That's as sad as you are.
I know, right?
Is there like a jingle-generating app or something?
It's the old-timey radio app.
Yeah.
Too and now?
Voice leading Jim Ward.
Wow.
See? I did that to get you in the mood before I do this guess the quote. Who said, let me get this straight?
Uh-oh.
The president kept revenues on the table, did not touch the sunset provisions in the Bush tax cuts, ensured that the military cuts keep the GOP honest, protected Medicare by adding in only provider cuts in the trigger, made the reduction apparently enough to stave off a debt downgrade, got the debt ceiling raised, wounded Boehner by demonstrating to the world that he's controlled by the Tea Party caucus, took out a requirement that a balanced budget amendment be passed and sent to the states, and got the extension through 2012. What exactly is wrong with this deal? Who said that?
Richard Quest.
No, that was a bad guess. Talking points memo. Agrees with Salon.com and others. Randy Rhodes, the president in Cape, just saying. Okay. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from any. Oh, look at this one. Somebody sent me, Paul Krugman is a political rookie. We'll get to that one later.
Oh, boy.
Brilliant economist, just saying. There are two sides to this.
And so you hate Bill Clinton now, too.
No, I don't hate Bill Clinton.
He was pushing for Obama to use the 14th
Amendment. Who said, of course, Krugman is right about the economic stupidity of these cuts. Krugman is usually right on economic topics. But if we followed his policies, I have no doubt we'd be in better shape today. But as usual, he's disastrously wrong on the political implications of the deal. If we lived in a dictatorship, policy and politics could be synonymous. But as we live in a society specifically designed to force compromise and not really very well designed for having one of the people at the compromising table be bug nuts crazy, policy and politics do not often fully or even partially intersect these days. It doesn't matter who said it, just someone that disagrees with you. So I'm just saying, because we present both sides here.
Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton disagreed with you, too.
Because, you know, I like to listen to both sides, and I like to present both sides on my radio program. And now, here is Ari Berman, our good friend from The Nation. Good morning, Ari.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you for coming back. What's your take on this? As we've been saying, you know, boy, people on both sides of even the progressive side of this have different thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm not too crazy about the deal. I mean, I heard that spin earlier about all the great things that it protects. But, I mean, I think we have to step back and think about, number one, how did we get in this place? Because the debt ceiling is something that routinely was just passed by Congress and presidents without any sort of fight over it. So the fact that we had this prolonged battle and the fact that deficit reduction was actually tied to the debt ceiling was in and of itself a bad thing for the country and a bad thing for President Obama. And then
I totally agree with you on that, and that's what I started the show off by asking Congresswoman Schakowsky about that, because that's, I mean, of course I woke up and thought, could we have forced just a clean, you know, and let them be the party that defaults, and she said, we tried that they would have defaulted. There is a significant Tea Party majority that would, rooting for default.
Okay, fine. So then you get to the thing, well, what could Obama have done? Could he have used the 14th Amendment, or at least dangled it as some sort of leverage to the Tea Party, saying, you want to default the economy, I'm going to use the 14th, I don't need to deal with you guys anymore. He could have done that, or he could have insisted on a balanced package. Now, we kept saying, okay, fine, we can't get a clean debt ceiling raise, which is what we should have had. Okay, let's take a 50-50 approach, half revenue, half cuts. This is 0 to 100. There is no revenue in the bill, and people keep saying, okay, well, the Bush tax cuts are still out there. Well, listen, the Bush tax cuts were out there in December. Obama punted on them. There's no indication that he's not going to punt again. Now, maybe what he'll try to do is preserve the tax cuts for everybody but the wealthy, but that's very dicey because then he actually has to pass them through legislation again. So really, we have no idea what's going on. We're going to be spending months and months and months now through November talking about the debt yet again because of this creation of this ridiculous super committee. And basically what's happened is both Democrats and Republicans, and this is what I'm most concerned about, Democrats and Republicans are both now in this age of austerity. There's no focus on jobs. There's no focus on growing the economy. It's all about cuts. It's all about austerity. Mm-hmm. And I think in the long run, that's an absolutely losing message for progressives.
Well, I mean, that, and, you know, Jim and I have talked about, I mean, obviously, Paul Krugman is right on a great many things, and you know, A, that the stimulus should have been bigger, but I think whoever I was just quoting last, I think, raises a point, right? side is there is, you know, politics, and there is what's right economically. And I agree with you that, you know, as Jim has said, that's how we got into the Depression, by cutting at a time when we shouldn't be. But, you know, it just, we live in this political reality, don't you think, Ari, that it is, easy for Bill Clinton to go, oh, you could have done that or you should have done this. Again, the president chose not to put us in a constitutional crisis, I guess,
okay,
you know.
There's two issues here, though. There is the actual substance and then there's the rhetoric. And it's very possible that on the substance, Obama is somewhat handcuffed by the Tea Party and by the Republican Congress. There's no doubt about it. He's not constrained by them rhetorically. So he doesn't have to make their arguments for him.
Right.
He could be making a counter argument. He could be making a case for progressive governance. He could be making a case for jobs. The same sales pitch that we saw throughout the debt ceiling debate, he could be making every single day on jobs, but he's choosing not to. He's actually endorsing the frames of the right. And I wrote about this last week in The Nation. I wrote a piece called The Rise of the Austerity Hawk Democrats. I mean, this is a conscious decision by the Democratic Party to, in some ways, try to out-hawk the Republicans when it comes to this
right.
age of austerity.
But Ari,
and that's really where I think you can't really defend them anymore.
Yeah, but, you know, Ari, I think that what this debt debate has also done is really exposed who the Tea Party is. They really are crazy. And they were, many of them, actively rooting for default. And so I'm going to take a minute and thank the president for saving us from, you know, worldwide financial catastrophe with what he's up against politically.
Who cares if they're crazy? I mean, seriously, who cares if they're crazy? They won this fight. They got pretty much everything they wanted short of default. They completely pushed the entire debate to the right. Mm-hmm. Boehner very skillfully used them to say, oh, I need to get more cuts or else the Tea Party won't vote for this. I mean, Boehner is an ally of the Tea Party. This idea that there's friction between them, I think, is pretty ridiculous. They both help each other.
You know, Ari, I mean, that's why we have you on, because I love hearing both sides of this. I'm on another site right now. How Barack Obama left John Boehner holding the teabag again. You know, I heard Debbie Wasserman Schultz this morning saying, of course, Boehner's going to say he got everything he wanted. It's chest beating. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at Nate Silver and you read the fine print, I don't think it's as bad as you know, some people are screaming about. I just don't.
What did Democrats get, though? I mean, basically, the only thing they were able to do is do no harm to some programs. Mm-hmm. And that's all they got. They didn't get any job creation. They didn't get any core Democratic priorities. They're just playing defense.
No revenues.
Completely playing no revenues. They've been playing defense ever since the 2010 election. Mm-hmm. They're still playing defense. We live right now in the Tea Party society where 86 freshmen Republicans have hijacked the United States Congress and the United States government. That seems like a victory to me.
Yeah, but I go back and ask, though, Ari, what would you have done? How could any of us know how this would have played out?
Well, he let the Republicans frame the debate as a problem.
He let the Republicans frame the debate. I mean, I think that's the most important thing is in terms of how he frames the debate. If he had made the debate after the 2010 election, if he had focused laser-like on jobs and said, okay, I want to know how every one of these ideas helps or hurts jobs. If he had framed the debt ceiling debate as this is going to cost us X number of jobs, and he framed every Tea Party plan that way, I think he would have significant amount of leverage at pushing through a counter agenda or at least stopping a lot of these draconian cuts. I mean, there's ideas out there, for example, like an infrastructure bank that have support from the AFL-CIO and the Chamber of Commerce, and we don't hear anything about them.
But if you're living in this political reality that the president is living in, and you see, you know, vast majorities people polled want compromise, want this deal to get done. You know, I mean, I just think that's what I'm saying is there is, you know, Paul Krugman's a great economist. He's not a politician. I think there are different parts of this that, you know, I'm just saying everything the president has done, you have said he should have done it differently somehow.
You know,
everything.
Majorities of the country.
We should have tried bin Laden. We should have.
On the jobs crisis, not on the deficit. So if you want to talk about public opinion, I think both parties have been ignoring public opinion for quite some time by focusing so obsessively on the deficit to the exclusion of jobs.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least the Democrats are fighting for the right things, you know, at least the Jan Schakowskis of the world.
They're not fighting for the right things. I mean, both parties are fighting for spending cuts at a time when we should be talking about jobs.
And it seems like, you know, the Democrats compromise, while, you know, the Republicans didn't compromise. They just stayed their ground. How did that happen?
There was no compromise by the Republicans.
Yeah,
I mean,
because they're mostly crazy.
They didn't default. I mean, and that's not a compromise.
Well, right. For a lot of the Tea Party members, it is. They think that's what they, you know.
For the mainstream of the Republican Party, right. Whatever that is right now, this was not a compromise. I mean, this was basically them getting whatever they wanted and then now having another commission to go back and revisit this and have this whole discussion yet again about entitlements, again about the deficit with no discussion of jobs for another 6 months.
This is the wrong time to be cutting. You can't cut your way out of a recession. And Roosevelt learned that the hard way in 1937. And it took a
World War. I think Obama learned it the hard way in 2012, the way things are going. Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's true love, is that I, even though this was deeply sadomasochistic for me, I enjoyed it. And I enjoy having you on, and I enjoy hearing different opinions. And I'm going to go pour hot coffee on my genitals now. Thank you so much for...
Any time I can help.
All right. Thank you, Ari. I appreciate it. Ari Berman from...
Yay, Ari.
Yeah, I'm not going to be sad that I don't allow different opinions that give me a headache in my eye.
Yeah, but then you talk about these people behind their back when they're gone, like you talked about Jim in the first
hour. Okay. 17.
And then you dragged me down into there too. I said he shouldn't have.
But there was a poll.
I gave
that
Jim a poll.
People want compromise. It was a poll. They want a compromise. That's why we have.
All right. 17 minutes after the hour.
Wow, it's going to be tense today.
Awkward. I'm going to try Bin Laden live. How come we didn't? Paul Krugman is a political rookie, and we will read that.
Oh boy!
Next, now it's dueling reading articles.
And Bill Clinton is also a political rookie. He was talking about the 14th Amendment. He wanted Obama to go with the 14th Amendment. So I guess Bill Clinton's a political rookie.
Stephanie, where are my migraine pills?
I don't think he should have gone with the 14th Amendment. So there you go.
Thank you, Chris LeBoy.
And 18 I've minutes said after that before.
The hour. Oh, we're gonna have a Marcus Bachman bit next.
Oh God,
that'll
yes.
make you feel better. All right, before I fight with Jim again, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Public indecency? We weren't really doing it. We were just acting.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Funny little family.
Yay.
Jim and I were just bitch-slapping each other over politics, and then during the break, I had some fish. I was like, would you like some? Why, yes.
Have some. After you. Oh, no. You first. Thank you.
Would you like some coleslaw? Why, yes.
After you. Oh, no. You first. Thank you.
We Where'd love each other. Right we just It's just all a skit when we're on the air.
Right before he actually does a skit, he's shoving food into his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, boy.
We just play mortal enemies on the radio. In real life, we're actually friends. And he comes to my house, and I seal him up, and sings karaoke.
That's because you serve him liquor.
Yes, and he does funny Eric Cantor voices for me, because our new obsession is Eric Cantor's bitchface.tumblr.com.
Yes.
Hilarious.
Tumblr without an E.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
It's very funny stuff here. I mean, you have to really see the face to go with it, but...
Yeah.
Someone get those children and their sticky hands away from my chaise lounge. I was so embarrassed for her. I mean, who serves kale in 2011? Do not speak that way to me in front of the help. And she was all, what's yoga lattes? And I was all, what do you mean, what's yoga lattes?
Such a little bitch face.
I didn't bleeping want to go see Eat, Pray, Love with you anyhow. He's just sitting next to Boner. OMG, you took a taxi? That's precious.
It's such an unctuous little twerp.
When he's standing behind John McCain making a weird face. Old people smell like steamed peas and loneliness.
Old people do.
They do.
I do. Yeah. All right. And meanwhile, is this Mike and Raleigh?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it's a new Marcus Bachman bit.
Do you have a loved one like this? This Saturday, bring your cousin, your brother, your uncle, the one you're not too sure about, to the Sheboygan Pavilion, and witness the techniques of Dr. Marcus Bachman.
Just watch me. It's so simple. This ain't married.
It's Bachman. Get some over, guy.
Take it out.
Take it out.
Every day. Take it out the Guinness. I'm not gay.
gentlemen, get some older guys. This Saturday, trade your Prius for a Camaro.
T and then a he. Dave in Long Beach, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
How about we put Paul Krugman on the shelf for a minute here? Obama could have driven 5 times the bargain he drove, and he would have had, and he could have had David Stockman behind one shoulder as he made the announcement, and Bruce Bartlett behind the other. You know, we're using Paul Krugman as some kind of crutch. Obama could have driven a hard bargain, and he would have had a cover from rock-ribbed Republicans.
Right.
That
Well, you know, I think, Dave, what the point is, again, is, you know, there are different opinions on our side. Paul Krugman certainly has valid points. So does Bill Clinton. So does Randy Rhodes. So does Salon.com. Oh, the headline, Obama didn't cave on the debt ceiling. This one, it happens to be from peoplesview.net. Paul Krugman is a political rookie, or how Barack Obama left John Boehner holding the teabag again. Paul Krugman is a political rookie. At least he is when compared to President Obama. Joining the ideologue sphere's pure, fanatic, and domino hysteria, Krugman declares the deal a disaster, both political and economic, of course, providing no evidence for the latter, which I find curious for this Nobel-winning economist. He's either unwilling or unable to actually look at the deal that was announced and realize what just happened. Barack Obama ate John Boehner's lunch, and then he turned Boehner out to go preach to his conservative colleagues that his eating of the lunch by Obama is actually politically good for them. He goes into some of the details here. The initial cuts do not include Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid programs for the poor. It actually increases Pell Grants, $350 billion, almost half the cuts. Are in the defense budget. These are not simply the savings coming from winding down the wars. This actually cuts the base defense budget. The loudest screeching noise you hear coming from Krugman and the ideologue left is, of course, Medicare. Oh, no, the president's agreeing to a Medicare trigger. He goes to quote from the actual bill. Likewise, any cuts to Medicare would be capped and limited to the provider side. Read that again. That's what the media and the whiners are not telling you. The president agreed to no Medicare benefit cuts in the trigger. None. The cuts, if they automatically happen, would go to whom? The providers. So while Krugman is correct in pointing out that the teabaggers will hold everything and its mother hostage in order to get what they want is already being taken away from them. They will not be able to threaten the deficit reduction group with looming cuts in Social Security or programs for the poor, civilian or military retirement, or Medicaid or even Medicare benefits. Instead, the Republicans do not let the default deficit committee act in a manner commensurate with the president's demand that include tax and revenue increases. They will be setting up defense cuts and setting themselves up for dry campaign coffers on donations from the medical and pharmaceutical industries. So, anyway.
Puppy's right.
Yeah, and then some other good stuff in here that I'll get to after the break. But I just think it's worth looking at both sides of it. 29 minutes after the hour, would you like some more coleslaw? Good. Oh, fabulous.
After you. Yeah. Oh, no. You first. Thank you.
Okay. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Why can't
Stephanie Miller
be as lovable as these kids on Glee?
I'm not. Old and bitter. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Fresh faces. Whatever.
Yeah.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from
one
anywhere.
One of those teenagers is 27. So, yeah.
They're all young to me. Krugman is wrong, says White House economic advisor. Just
which
saying,
one?
Jim, different
which
opinions.
One? Which
Gene advisor? Sperling.
And you are?
He's with the White House economic advisor.
Yeah.
He said after someone read him what Krugman wrote, as you did yesterday, that Obama caved on the Bush tax cuts, the government shut down now the deficit. He said, well, that's wrong and wrong, and then I think wrong. It was the president who stood firm, who didn't blink on that, and in the end we have a deal that takes the threat of default off our political system, off our economy, into 2013. Let me just get to the end of this thing I was reading, then we'll go back to the phones. The peoplesview.net. They're talking about a lot of this is backloaded, Jim. These triggers don't even go into effect in 2012. They go into effect in 2013. So the president gets the debt limit increase now. The triggers don't even kick in until more than a year from now. The cuts are backloaded. Why do you suppose that is? Because Congress is notorious for changing its mind when push comes to shove. This is what I mean about get out and vote. Let's get a Congress to undo this, you know? And there's a thing that's supposed to have happened by 2013 on, a presidential election will have intervened. Republicans already lost the fourth reddest district by going after Medicare. So anyone who thinks that absent something from this super committee, Congress will not actually block a big Medicare provider cut in an election year, please step forward. I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you.
Yeah, who's going to be on this super committee, by the way?
Super
And
people.
How much power will they have?
Is Marcus Bachmann going to be on it? He's super. The, here we go. I'll say, the
super. Thanks for asking.
There's another little
Understand,
trigger for the
barbarians need
All right.
to be educated.
There's a little, another little trigger for the Republicans, but it's technically not part of the deal. It's a trigger to get serious about revenue increases. It's the Bush tax cuts, and the president is ready to use his veto pen to raise taxes on the rich if Republicans prevent the committee charged with deficit reduction from seriously delving into revenue increase. Reading from the actual thing, the president can use his veto pen to raise nearly $1 trillion from the most well-off by vetoing the extension of the Bush high-income tax cuts. If you look at the details, the president essentially gave up almost nothing in the triggers. John Boehner, as usual, put himself between two triggers, three if you count the clock ticking on the Bush tax cuts, both bad for his party. McConnell is basically trying to sell his surrender pig with a little lipstick on it. Boehner went dancing to his conservative House morons about how great this deal is for them, but then by now we should all have learned that Boehner is very bad at his job, and President Obama always eats his lunch and leaves him there holding the teabag. So another take. Just saying.
Weren't the Bush tax cuts supposed to expire last year? What happened there?
Stephanie in Madison, you're on... I'm not serving him fish anymore.
He has a point.
Stephanie in Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
I have a headache in my eye from all of this. I don't know, but, you know, living in Wisconsin, I know firsthand it's impossible to deal with some of these... reason with some of these right-wing wackos. And, you know, when you deal with crazy, you're going to get a bit of crazy in any bill you pass. And I don't really know what people expect from the president. You know, there's not everything is great in that, and certainly I want the revenues. I mean, for God's sake, that's like, you know, my cat can understand that should be in there. But, you know, some of this stuff, these people are just rotten.
Yeah.
And they're crazy. You cannot deal and bargain and reason with crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what Congresswoman Schakowsky said right at the top of the show this morning. You know, I said, what could we have gotten a clean? What if we'd, you know, not blinked, just said, clean debt deal, that's it. And she said, we tried that, you know. I mean, that's the thing, is you really are dealing with people that they want to drive us over the cliff.
A clean up or down vote.
Yeah. Steve in Santa Fe, where Mama's going Saturday. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Stephanie. I do have tickets. We're going to be there on Saturday.
Woo-hoo! Sexy Liberal at the Lenzic. Saturday, two shows, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m.
And I'd like to be the official PhD geologist of Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, hello now, boy howdy for you.
The point I wanted to make was I think everybody's getting into the wrong Republican talking point that it's all about Obama. Even you say it. So what did Obama do, not do? I think we ought to talk more about how the Boehner has absolutely zero leadership ability. He's supposed to be Speaker of the House, not the head of his caucus. And if he had gotten together with the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi and enough Republicans, they could have passed a clean bill. So really, I wish we would hammer on how Boehner had no leadership, McConnell had no leadership, because they're running scared to the Tea Party freshman House members, and the Speaker of the House is scared of them.
Rachel has a great Rachel Maddow does a great running bit about John Boehner is bad at his job. He just is. Ross in Hollywood, Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Ross.
Hey, how's everybody
Good.
Doing?
Go
I hope
ahead.
You bring your sexy liberal tour to Miami sometime soon.
Uh-huh. But, I think South Florida might be in the works.
I hope so.
Okay.
I just wanted to call in. In that last piece you read kind of stole a lot of my thunder, but you know, I think everybody's lost focus that you look at what the priorities were, and it's not perfect. It's not what I would have liked either. But at the end of the day, Obama protected Social Security, protected Medicare. He got the debt ceiling raised past the next elections. This super committee that constitutionally kind of bothers me, but it's still the pressure is now going to be back on them, and the Democrats are going to have all the leverage, because if the Republicans try and put their heels in the dirt, then these triggers activate. What's going to happen? They're going to lose defense spending, which they don't
That's right.
want. They're going to lose Medicare provider coverage, which are or payouts, which they're not going to want. So the Democrats are going to have a second bite of the apple by being able to activate a revenue stream right before the next elections, and then the Bush tax cuts come up right after that. So is it perfect? No, but it's a hell of a lot better deal than everybody's making it out to be. And I just can't understand why everybody's focusing on negatives instead of looking at what was accomplished. I think this is Obama being a chess player when the Republicans are checker players.
Yep. That's all I'm saying is, you know, it's interesting. You listened yesterday just to different analysis. You know, I went to Salon.com. I listened to Randy Rose. And, Jim, it's not to say Paul Krugman is obviously not brilliant and right on some points. But, you know, on the politics, I guess we'll see how it plays out. Senator Reid yesterday.
We need to send this to President Obama as soon as we can. It's been a long process. I'm confident we did the right thing for the American people.
So, what is it? 9 Pacific noon. It goes to the
Eastern,
to the Senate, which
noon Eastern.
Yeah, which it will likely pass. Donnie in Olympia, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Don. Hello. Hi, Donnie.
How goes it?
Good.
Hey, look. Just my take, real quick. You know, that deal aside, this thing shouldn't happen in the first place. This thing never happens. We're talking about we're making a big fiasco over something that's just as common as parting the Thanksgiving turkey. You know, but the thing about it is this. The folks who did it, the GOP, IET party, right, they did it for one reason only, to divert all of our energies off of creating jobs, point blank, period, you know?
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Well, every other year, in every other Thanksgiving in the history of the United States, yes, it would be just a normal carving of the Thanksgiving. You know what this is like? This is Sarah Palin shoving a turkey live into a wood chipper behind her on television. It's that kind of Thanksgiving for the Tea Party. It's always death and destruction and mayhem. Okay. Nancy Pelosi, yes.
We have problems with no revenue in the bill when we are having severe cuts, and we need to make some cuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I hope the people that are making the point about the Bush tax cuts are correct. Mm-hmm. You know, read Salon.com. It's Matthew Dickinson is the article. Okay, and the boner.
My goal is to get this bill passed, signed into law, to solve this debt crisis, and help get the American people back to work.
Yeah, sure. That's always been your focus. Marcus in Cincinnati, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Marcus.
Jeff.
Hey.
I just wanted to weigh in on dealing in, with Republicans. Just really a quick scenario, if you just give me a second. If I am holding like 100 people hostage because I need $1 million for an operation for one of my children,
mm-hmm.
and it's another person who's holding 100 people hostage just because he wants $1 million and doesn't care what happens to the hostages. And then all of a sudden we get a threat that they're going to burn the building down and I let my hostages go because I don't really want anything bad to happen to them. I'm not actually caving. I'm actually doing what's best for the largest amount of people. And that's what the president and the Democrats have been doing. Mm.
That was a good analogy. I was starting. You were starting to lose me. I was wondering, what if the hostages are on a train going to Chicago at 14 miles an hour? But I get it.
But that's what they've been doing. Is they're not caving. They're doing what's in the best interest of the American people,
yeah,
or what they believe in the best interest. When you have somebody who, a group of people who just don't care what happens to anyone,
yeah,
they're going to get more of what they want because they don't care if the nation goes to hell in a handbasket. They don't care.
Yep.
And so we need to, instead of continually saying that Democrats and the president are caving, we need to work hard to get the grassroots going and elect real,
yes, and get these
Democrats
teabaggers out, exactly.
And get
by the
way,
Marcus,
your
child doesn't need a surgery, right?
No.
Okay, good. Because I was, you know, we could try to raise money here rather than have a crisis on our hands.
Yeah.
Just trying to avert things.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I do what I can. Brian and Charlotte, you're on.
Saving America one listener at a time.
There we go.
Yep.
Brian, hello, Brian.
Hey, I'm no lawyer. I just played one on the Stephanie Miller newscast.
Yes.
But couldn't they have just done an injunction if Obama used the 14th Amendment the way they did with the marriage equality thing? I'm not sure. I'm just asking.
Wait, say that one more time. Could he?
Obama was, they were saying that Obama should have used the 14th Amendment. Well, that's tied in with the courts. Couldn't they have gotten an injunction, like when they sued him, couldn't the judge have ordered an injunction to stop him from getting money from the Treasury?
Boy, you got me, honey.
Until,
I don't even pretend to play a lawyer on the Stephanie Miller newscast. I don't I don't think
that would go to the courts because it's in the Constitution specifically that he can do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Representative Bitchface. I'm sorry. Eric Cantor. I've been looking at the website too long.
Eric Cantor's bitchface.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm.
For too many decades now, on the part of both parties, this town has spent money it doesn't have. And by sending to the Congress this year 87 new Republicans, the American people have actually changed that and have changed the direction of this country.
I said
the bill is not perfect, and it's not. But changing the way that Washington spends taxpayer dollars is often a lot like redirecting or turning an aircraft carrier.
Nobody is voting until I get some lemon meringue. Your provincialism, this pleases me.
This is from Eric Andrews, bitchface.tumblr.com.
There's the fly in my julep.
Okay. He does. You know what he starts to sound like to me? Have you seen that, the video of the dog that's whining about, the guy's taunting him about what kind of food he's taking out of the refrigerator? And he's like, maple, bacon. That's him. I'm just saying. He's just whining.
Maple. Someone get these children and their sticky hands away from my Chase lounge.
Okay.
I was so embarrassed for her. I mean, who serves kale in 2011?
46 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
We've got to keep up our strength for the fight against evil!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. I love it when Cammy sends me e-cards. I'd love to see a crossover show with Jersey Shore and Shark Week.
Yeah.
Me too. It means so much to me that whenever I need to go out, get trashed and talk about people, you're always there for me.
Friends.
Okay. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Eric Cantor.
The House will vote on a measure today that, although not perfect, will begin to change the culture here in Washington.
There's a fly in my mint julep. I fed French cuffs.
Okay. Can I just say that it's kind of funny to hear Senator Hooker Vitter talk about fiscal responsibility?
This bill, this so-called solution, doesn't fundamentally change our spending and debt picture.
At least we're not spending money on hookers!
And diapers.
Yes!
Adult diapers.
Hookers and diapers. See, that's why I can't be in Congress, because that's what I'd start screaming while he was talking. Hookers and diapers! You spent all your money on hookers and diapers!
So, when he wears the diapers, is it just the diapers that give him a thrill, or is it doing something in the diapers?
Well, I...
And is Eric Cantor just... He's just a baby. He doesn't maybe like to wear diapers. He just likes to whine.
Oh, okay.
I hate being disintegrated.
He's a little bit of Marvin the Martian.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And all maybe a little Pete Puma.
Yeah.
Salon, Obama did not cave on the debt ceiling. Let me just read
this again. Gosh.
I didn't read any of it.
Oh. Oh, you
predictably, though the ink is not yet dry on the debt agreement, Obama's getting crucified on left-leaning blogs, blah, big suggesting the right one, with charges that he was outmaneuvered, that he caved. Let me briefly take issue with the prevailing political sentiment among Obama's Democratic base. Since the day he was elected, I've detected what I believe to be a completely unrealistic, emotion-driven faith among his hardcore supporters that he was different from other politicians, that he could somehow overcome the political constraints and institutional barriers that have limited the power of all of his presidential predecessors. I saw it in the debate regarding Gitmo, military commissions, the public option, Afghanistan, extending the Bush tax hikes, and now this. This sentiment was perhaps never more manifest than in the fervent belief that, among some, that he was playing a deep game during these negotiations, maneuvering to a position where he could cut the Gordian knot of budget impasse with a masterstroke. 14th Amendment, anyone? And in this latest occurrence, when he failed to fulfill these outlandish expectations, his erstwhile supporters proceeded to blame it on a character defect, a lack of fortitude, an absence of courage, or perhaps simple political naivete. The reality is that this budget outcome had nothing to do with personal weakness and everything to do with political weakness. Obama is fighting for his political life. I agree, and sometimes the left isn't helping.
Yeah, we can just get rid of all the leftists.
The House is occupied by an opposing party.
More like the Republicans.
Energized by... I will throw coleslaw on you. The House is occupied by an opposing party energized by newly elected representatives. Crazies. Convinced they've been sent to Washington to do God's work by cutting spending, given that he has less than 14 months to turn the economy around, the presidents are held responsible for the nation's economy, he wasn't going to start that political recovery by watching the government default on its loan obligations. Given this context, the idea that this president was in a position of political strength during these budget negotiations is pure fantasy. Indeed, it should be the Tea Party members who are mad. In all likelihood, they could have forced a ballot budget vote as part of the package. Where's the outraged boner? Isn't he the one who caved? My point is simple. Obama had two imperatives during this fight, prevented default and get this issue off the table after 2012, period. So, Matthew Dickinson, salon.com, interesting stuff if you want another take on it.
We'll have to see if it works out.
All right. Let's go to Nancy in Akron. Hey, Nancy, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Now, I think that progressives should stop griping and we should all get together and do the hard grassroots work that we need to do in order to give President Obama the strength he needs, the help he needs to get done what we all want to get done. He can't do it by himself.
Yep.
He has had the cards stacked against him from the very beginning, and when he can't somehow miraculously wave a wand and have all that opposition go away, and he can't somehow change the rules, then we dump on him. And that is so unfair to me.
Yep.
And the fact is that our political system was based on the assumption that the people who were playing in it were sane.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, exactly, exactly. They are bug crazy, as I mentioned. In short, I'll just finish.
Oh.
This is probably the best deal Obama was going to negotiate. It's not like he didn't try to get revenue increases on the table. In fact, he rejected the original boner deal because it didn't have enough revenues. In the end, Obama didn't have the political capital to leverage anything else from House Republicans. I'm not saying Obama handled this flawlessly, although I'm hard-pressed to point out obvious specific errors. The result was always likely to come out pretty much where it did, when it did. I said as much weeks ago. Maybe some of you can tell me why so many very smart people, since the day Obama was inaugurated, deluded themselves into thinking he was somehow going to step into office and proceed to rewrite political laws that govern presidential politics for the last two centuries. Matthew Dickinson at salon.com. Representative Kevin McCarthy, Republican, California.
We're at a crossroads. This is a fundamental change for this government. This is a fundamental change for this country, but it's only a start.
All right. Jason in D.C., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll give you my biggest gripe with Obama, and that is, you know, his whole claim about everything's going to be out in the open, we're going to have it on C-SPAN, it's such a crock. You know, with these gang of six people...
Did you really want to watch more of these debt negotiations? They've been having dueling press conferences for how long? I mean, I think it's been pretty clear what's going on, hasn't it?
Yeah, but let it be out there. The moment you have these things go back behind closed doors, you don't know what sort of deals they're doing. And the thing about this whole debt stuff, at the end of the day, I didn't see them say, you know what, we can't fight a war in Iraq anymore. We're going to bring the troops home. Or, you know what, this Department of Education, we've had it for 20 years, and education seems to be getting worse. Why don't we just get rid of that? Like, where are these big things where you could say,
well, I don't think anyone wants
some things don't work.
I don't think anybody wants to end the Department of Education.
Well, the Tea Party does.
Unless you're Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Yes, along with anything that regulates anything of any kind.
Yeah.
Or is any sort of government. Why? All right. What was I going to say? Representative Gabrielle Giffords. I just think I can't say enough. We've got some sound from her friend Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Nancy Pelosi when we come back. But it was she came and voted yes.
Yep.
Urged compromise. So we will talk about that much more. Aisha Tyler joins us on the phone.
Hooray!
For Phonic Tuesdays with Tyler next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine.
see.
Oh, jeez. See, now I need a jingle to cheer me up. Mm-hmm. Yep, now I do. Yep. Thank you, Mike and Raleigh.
Fox Wine Drinking Radio Slag, Stephanie Miller.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I have new jingles, and I couldn't be happier.
Sexy liberal Stephanie Miller.
Yay!
Yay!
Okay. Speaking really of cool. Jingly and things that make me happy.
Aisha Tyler.
Yeah!
Actress, author, and activist.
So if today's Tuesday, it gives us...
Tuesdays with Tyler.
And we might also add podcaster in there.
Good morning, Aisha Tyler.
Actress.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We miss you madly. You're off doing something fabulous, as you want to do.
Well, you know, everything that I do, it attempts for fabulosity and just kind of limps out around middling, fair to middling.
No, but, no. You're shooting something, as they say in the glamorous world of Hollywood.
I was doing some live shows in Vegas. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's performing.
Awesome. Speaking of which, Sexy Liberal this Saturday. It's the very first Aisha Tyler show. We're very excited. The Lensic Theater, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. We're so excited.
It's going to be great. Beautiful, beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Not so much fun for you because I think you're on the same flight as me, so I'll be like that geeky girl just trying to hang around with a really cool girl for like hours.
I'm going to just put my eye mask on and take some Benadryl and let my mouth hang open.
Yeah, exactly. And then Detroit, of course, August 20th. Tickets going fast for both of those. Why? Because Aisha Tyler's on the show and she's fabulous.
Oh, I'm just riding your liberal coattails.
Yeah. Because I'm stupid enough to call something sexy liberal and stand on stage next to her. I am an idiot.
I'm going to wear a muumuu and one boot.
You are my favorite hot ghetto mess. You know that.
Yes. Thank you.
Now, what we've been talking about this debt thing, obviously, all morning. And
of course.
And, you know, that's the thing is, I mean, there really are, even on the progressive side, there is a split. Where do you come down on it?
You know, it's been really difficult for me because there's a big part of me that wanted the president to let those guys just swirl down into the drain and then just, raise it assuming himself.
Yeah.
And I was really in love with that idea. I just felt like, let these guys argue, let them, you know, have a pissing contest. The president's going to do what's right for the country. And then he comes out, you know, kind of as the responsible parent here, you know. I don't know that this is a weakness of his. I think it's a great quality, but I think it's a frustrating quality in this context. He deeply believes in doing the right thing, and he deeply believes in compromise. He deeply believes that adults can get the job done. But, right. I think that he's... I don't know. I'm frustrated. I think he's in a weakened position, but I don't know that anybody thinks that the Congress has come out on top here either. I mean, I just think this is just a big fat foo bar, and in the truest sense of the acronym.
Yeah. I hear you.
So everybody can go Google that if you want to figure out what it
is. Listen,
really
means. You can let it fly in Santa Fe Saturday because stage show
will,
is filthy.
My friend, yes, foo bar is not a brand of candy.
yummy foo bar.
Delicious foo bar. Lots of nuts. and a terrible aftertaste.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was saying that, you know, I get Paul Krugman's points, and yet at the same time, I was saying, you know, there's other people, whether it's Randy Rhodes or Salon.com or, you know, other places that don't, you know, think this is a bad deal.
Yeah, it's interesting. Krugman has been this kind of unflinching critic of the president, and I think definitely, you know, I respect his opinion. I think he's obviously, like, a well-reasoned guy. He didn't necessarily influence my feelings about it. I was really fixated on the idea that he was going to kind of ride in on a horse and save the day.
Well, you know why? Because you're a lefty actress. So see,
as a
movie star,
liberal, violent.
You're looking for the movies. Well, I was saying that, but I think that's true. That, you know, there is that, you know, that you know, what, you know, deep down thing in us emotionally. Yeah, I know what you mean. You're just like, oh, I just wanted to shove it up Eric Kanker's ass, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that, you know, like I was saying, I do think that when you take a second and breathe, like Nate Silver at, you know, 528.com, I mean, he also said he thinks the deal is better. I mean, again, people tend to get a little hysterical on both sides. And in the meantime, guess what we would have if we had President Bachman? Take a listen.
We're going to now give the president almost $1 trillion. And then come Christmas time, he'll get potentially, we'll find out what the final numbers were, potentially upwards of another, in excess of $1 trillion, maybe as high as another $1.8 trillion. But that's on top of the other $2.2 trillion spending that we do. So this isn't just 2.4 or 2.8 trillion worth of spending, we have the full budget, which is another 2.2 trillion. I mean, these numbers, this is like saying we embrace being Greece.
We embrace being Greece?
Yes, we're Greece.
Is that the last thing she said?
Yes. Yes.
We embrace being Greek. She's a lovely lady. She was like, look, if I give you $5, then I take back $7, then I give you $3, then I take $20, then I reach into your pocket and I take your lunch money, I punch you in the face. I'm telling you, I feel a little Italian. That's what I feel right now.
I feel like her husband. I think her husband might be a little Greek, if you know what I mean.
What?
I don't know what I meant by that.
He enjoys a little Greek every
but
once in a while.
But someday she'll be president and Marcus will be queen.
Yay!
I must have the Aquitaine.
I'm laughing at that, but I don't feel that bad. she's the queen of obfuscation, and I never know. Like, with Palin, you always know that she doesn't even understand what she's saying. With Bachman, you don't know if she's confused or if she's trying to confuse you, like the penguins in Madagascar. We see nothing. She's waving her hands in front of her face because that was just a gibberish. She's just like a squid. She's just squirting ink.
Yes, she is squirting ink.
Confuse you.
You know why I like you best? Because you're pretty and you use words like obfuscation, and last week you said bicameral.
Every week I want the kids to learn one new SAT word.
It's vocab with Aisha Tyler.
And we're going to have boogity boogity cheese t-shirts in Santa Fe, limited edition.
Yes,
that's right.
Limited edition boogity boogity cheese t-shirts. I can't wait.
Made by underage children that Aisha Tyler has to make them in her basement.
I wore my boogity boogity cheese shirt last Friday and I got so many compliments on it.
Oh, how exciting.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Exactly.
I'm an unfetteredly enthusiastic person. That makes me very happy. I'm easily joyed.
Yeah.
Easily joyed. How about the Gabrielle Giffords moment though yesterday, huh? I mean,
that was exciting. Yeah. That was wonderful. It was, God. I mean, that whole ride. It's difficult because it's been such an intense news year since that happened. It's not that we've forgotten about Gabrielle. It's just that so much has been going on, and it was like just a transformative one. Wonderful.
I know.
It also reminded you of what a terrible thing happened to her.
I know.
And so it was very bittersweet, but it was wonderful to see her there.
Well, she walked in unannounced. Thunderous applause. Our friend and hers, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
She received thunderous applause, hugs, tears. Even the hardest heart, which we had a lot of hardened hearts in this debate, just melted when she walked in the room.
Aww.
Yeah. And she.
So wonderful.
Yeah, and she, obviously voted for the bill and apparently urged, bipartisan cooperation. She probably was like, stop being such douche nozzles, for God's sakes. Look
exactly
at what I've been through.
Seriously. Hey, douchebags. When you're whining and crying about, what are you crying about, buddy? They didn't have skim milk for your coffee this morning? I got shot in the head.
Yeah.
So, let's do this. You know what I mean? You puss.
All right, yes. Our new website you have to look at is,
ericcantorsbitchface.tumblr.com.
Yeah.
Tumblr spelled without an E.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris in Yankton writes, guys, have you noticed that in addition to him being an unctuous little twerp, Eric Cantor is really nerdy and awkward? If you didn't know he was a powerful member of Congress, you'd think he was the sad little nerd who the other nerds gave swirlies and nuclear wedgies every day at school.
When they offered me a swirly, I thought it was a fancy drink.
He really is a whiner. He's like, I always love to talk about Spike and Mike. I don't know why I'm obsessed with that cartoon.
Yeah.
But Boehner is Spike, a very weepy Spike, and then Sanders a really whiny Mike. He's great. Oh, whatever he wants to do, we're going to do it together because we're a team. And we're going to show the president. And I'm just going to – I like Boehner. He's my friend.
It's true. It's true.
So over them.
Yeah, I don't, I know that Rush Limbaugh hates this deal, so that's got to be
a
reason to like it, right?
Well, that's good. Anything that Rush Limbaugh hates, if Rush Limbaugh was like, I hate eating sandwiches made out of poo, I'd be like, I'm going to get a poo sandwich and eat it and send it to his house. He's the worst.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I'd say about him. I can't come up with an SAT word for him. He's just the worst.
Thank you. you've already used up your quota of SAT words this morning.
I don't want to upset people. What a day is fine.
Yeah.
Would that be a poo boy in New Orleans?
I'll give it to you.
Jim Louise Ward.
I'll give it to you.
Aisha, what is your new podcast about?
My new podcast.
About $1.50. No, it's free.
It's free. It's free. It's called Girl on Guy with Aisha Tyler. And it is a show about things that guys love, brought to you by The Ultimate Guy's Girl, which is, sounds a little self-involved. But this is a designation I've been given by other people. But it's really it's a set of interviews, not just with men, with women as well, but about kind of, because I was raised by a single dad, and so I grew up just loving video games and action movies, and my dad didn't even own a car until I was like 16, so I grew up on the back of a motorcycle.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow.
Until I was an adult, essentially. So this is just a show about the things that I love, because, you know, I'm really into video games and I love action films and all kinds of things like that, and I have different guy guests but also women guests just come on, and we really just talk about their lives. It's really just this kind of fun, like relaxed conversation, but it often revolves around, so like this today's episode was just went up, is with Brett Ehrlich. He was the host of Infomania and also Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh,
and we talk a lot
yeah.
about we talk a lot about action movies and,
awesome.
And like our love of action movies. So and then like last week was John Benjamin from Archer, the lead voice from Archer. And
right.
He tells, we have this one segment on the show called Self-Inflicted Wounds, which everybody has a self-inflicted wound story.
Sure.
This is a story where it usually is a drinking story, but it doesn't have to be. But it's when you did something so incredibly humiliating that you'll never forget it.
When haven't I?
yes, I had one. I'll have one in about 2 minutes. So, so everybody comes on, and John Benjamin was our inaugural show, and he told the most epic self-inflicted wound story. It was, it will stay with you forever.
Oh, wow.
Extraordinary. The one thing I'll tell you about it was it started with an epic bout of food poisoning that he got on a plane.
Ooh. Oh,
and,
no.
Yes, and having to drive through darkened Pasadena in the middle of the night. So it debuted, I'm really excited, it debuted at number 4
on
all
iTunes.
Comedy podcasts on
awesome.
iTunes.
Yeah.
And now it's at number 3.
Precious.
So I'm very excited.
Yay.
Well, speaking
what you
of.
Do is you get up in the morning, you listen to
yes.
Stephanie Miller.
Yes.
And then you have a little Aisha Tyler chaser at the end. Like
little chaser.
A little dab at the end.
And if you want both of us, come to the Santa Fe on Saturday night at the Lensing Theater Sexy Liberal Show.
Can you believe it's finally here?
I know. You and me and John Fugelsang, and then also Detroit coming up August 20th. We're so excited.
I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
Yeah, the guys are very excited, because you're a dude trapped in a gorgeous woman's body for some reason.
I always see them. There's a 13-year-old white guy trapped in a giant black woman's body. He loves it in there because he has boobs.
He can play with his boobs all day. All right. Aisha Tyler, we'll see you Saturday, honey.
Oh, much love, you guys.
Love you.
The country has been brought back from the brink for 3 or 4 seconds.
Yeah, we're going to par and then Tay in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
All right, honey. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
There
you
go. Yeah, Jim took a little boy howdy at that boogity cheese t-shirt on Aisha. Dang!
Yeah.
Roger Rabbit eyes.
Wow. Yeah. Ooga!
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
20 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
She's a bad man, mama. Just as fine as she can be. Hey, she's a bad man, mama. Just as fine as she can be.
Yeah, really bad mama jammer.
Yeah.
You gotta work on your mama jammer skills.
Terrible.
Was he previously a good one?
Who can say?
Who can say? 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. It's Jingle Man!
What?
Mike and Raleigh's on the phone. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mama and the Moog.
I love my new jingles, Mike.
You know, I thought of that a couple of months ago, and I knew a guy who knew a guy.
Yeah.
But that guy had to go to Liverpool and play the Cavern Club.
Great.
First.
Wow.
Before he could come back and cut the jingles. So they had the session on Thursday.
Yes.
And there were 5 guys and gals in Dallas. And I was on the phone sort of supervising, and I'm in the break room because I work, like, in an office. So I'm in the room going, no, it's Sheboygan. Not bark bark, but bark park.
Oh, Mike, you know what? Wow. This confirms once again that my listeners have the most amount of free time of any group of people
Absolutely.
In the world here. There were people.
I don't think we've ever sung these words before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't imagine they did.
They're like, sure, Mike, do we have time to go in the studio and say what? Sure, yes.
I didn't know they made jingles like this anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
I assumed it was like an iPhone app or something where you just sing into your phone and it comes out
like that.
Multi-part.
It's very old.
It actually cost more dollars. But
wow. Really?
Oh, Mike.
Mike.
We love you. Don't send me a bill. Anyway, it's very old-timey radio. We love them. Play something else. We love
The Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, heavens. Okay.
Well, if the 60s are old-timey.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it. Hurry up, hurry up with that Coffee with Carlos Sells Rocky jingle, would you?
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Coffee with who?
Oh, because the House Parks is in Edinburgh for all of August. So tomorrow will be Coffee with Carlos.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's eating a lot of fried food.
I don't know.
In Scotland?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, unless there's
he's
fried
a
tofu.
Nut. I mean,
yeah,
yeah,
I don't think so.
You can't find anything to eat in Scotland.
Ugh, haggis. Ah! Anika in Eureka.
Hey.
Is that just your radio name?
No, that's my real name, unfortunately.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right.
I called to cheer you up this morning because you're getting hit over the head with a Sirius stick all day, but it seems like Aisha Tyler and your Jingles guy did a great job, but on that same note, Sarah Palin's movie, The Undefeated, fell in its face across the country for $200 nationwide.
That sounds kind of
defeated.
Yeah,
I know. That sounds really defeated.
Yeah.
That sounds defeated again. all right. Let's see. More on the White House has one important tool in its arsenal to influence congressional talks over further deficit reduction measures in the coming months. The expiration of the Bush-era tax cuts at the end of 2012. Mm-hmm. White House officials stressed he would veto any attempt to extend the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans beyond next year. Unless other measures to reform the U.S. tax code were agreed to, which, you know, loopholes, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is raving the revenues will move to the new congressional committee. The White House said if tax reform does not succeed there, the tax cuts put forward by former President Bush will be history. The president has made clear if we don't have comprehensive tax reform, he's not going to extend, said one official. Those in Congress will have to decide whether or not they will then allow the middle class tax cuts to expire. Our sense is they probably won't. So I think that's incentive for everybody.
Well, if you like the Paul Krugman article I read the other day, you'll love Robert Reich's article on his blog called Ransom Paid from yesterday.
Don't make me. I'll go get my salon.com again.
Again?
Don't make me.
So one person in Salon is supporting the president. Pretty much everybody else.
Well, you know, David Plouffe was on NBC, asked repeatedly, as Paul Krugman and others suggest, it was a surrender. Blah, 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 blah. Plouffe said, we're not concerned about any of that. As the president said last night, it's been messy. I think the American people obviously would like a little bit more compromise, a little less shouting. That's the leadership the president tried to bring.
We can get rid of the liberals in the Democratic Party. That's the problem. Too many liberals.
Why do I feed him fish and coleslaw? Why? Why? 29 minutes after the
and
hour.
And you sign his paycheck.
It's rain food.
No, I don't.
You don't?
I got nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
Representative Elliot Engel, next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Am I trying to instigate fights by throwing wine at people just to get on camera? Of course not. I mean, is wine throwing something that even gets you on a reality show?
That's hot.
Kevin in Rochester writes, Jim does not have a point about the Bush tax cuts. It was either placate the right-wing douches and actually help the unemployed and downtrodden or throw those people to the wolves for eliminating tax cuts. People are hurting, and President Obama had a chance to help them. You should be reiterating the fact that GOP continually attempts to hurt most Americans and holds them hostage to the benefit of the top 1%. Not criticizing President Obama for helping the vast multitudes.
Still
really help. Just saying.
Read Robert Reich's column. Ransom paid.
I'll talk to someone. I'll do better than that. I'll see you and I'll raise you a congressman that voted against the bill. Good morning, Congressman Elliot Engel. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you. Your colleague, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, on earlier. You know, and we've obviously been, you know, talking this through all morning, and you know, clearly Paul Krugman and others have, you know, come down against this deal, and others have not. I know you voted against this. Tell us your thoughts on all this.
Well, the bottom line for me was fairness. I mean, first of all, I really resented the fact that the Republicans were holding the raising of the debt ceiling hostage. We had, as I'm sure people have said to you before, it happened 17 times under Reagan and 7 times under Bush, where there was a clean debt ceiling increase, and that's what should have happened here, and then we could have put our heads together and try to figure out how best to have future budgets.
But Congressman, let me stop you there, because absolutely, you're absolutely right, and we've all said this over and over. I think but the point now that I asked Congresswoman Schakowsky, I wanted to get your point, is because I thought that too. I woke up this morning and thought, what if we had just said clean bill, that's it, no compromise, we're not going to link these two together. But, you know, she said we tried that. And they, I mean, unfortunately, you have a number of Tea Party members in your Congress that absolutely didn't want to raise the debt ceiling. So do you feel like we should have gone back and tried to do, and don't, that we could have done it that way?
Well, I've been talking for several weeks about the president invoking the 14th Amendment, and I know that the president's advisors said that that's not something that could be done, but a lot of people think it could be done, including Bill Clinton. There are a lot of legal scholars who think it was worth the try to at least give the president some extra leverage on telling this to, you know, to the right wing. I mean, look, we were in a bad situation. There's no doubt about it. And they really should be ashamed of themselves. But in a way, you know, they got most of what they wanted. I know the more extreme elements still weren't satisfied. But if you had told me, Stephanie, 6 months ago, that we would have a package, a so-called compromise package, that would only center around cuts, and we weren't talking about making the billionaires pay a little bit more, or eliminating the Bush tax cuts, or make closing loopholes for big corporations, for big oil and gas, and GE paid no taxes last year, and that wouldn't even be included in the package, but we're only talking about which programs to cut.
Well, let me ask you, Congressman, on to the Today Show, Matt Lauer asked David Plouffe, is the fight over taxes over, and did the president lose it? And Plouffe said, absolutely not. You know, that obviously we have these Bush tax cuts that are due to expire. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, the Bush tax cuts were due to expire last December, and we were told in special session, look what a wonderful deal we have. You know, we are going to reinstitute the Bush tax cuts, but look what we're getting back for it. Isn't this wonderful? I voted no then.
But, Congressman, how do you personally, how do you, it's hard to even use the word negotiate with people that don't care if people run out of their unemployment benefits in this bad economy, if people that don't care if the United States defaults. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I think that the president, look, I don't fault the president. I really don't. I mean, he was caught between a rock and a hard place. And so it was difficult. But you know what? I think he's got to give, like Harry Truman used to say, you know, I don't give him hell. I just speak the truth and they think it's hell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the president really needs to call it the way it is. And I think he needs to show how the Republicans, with their own narrow agenda, are hurting the middle class. I mean, most people in this country consider themselves middle class. The Republicans do a good job at masquerading what they do, masquerading their true colors.
Yeah.
So, of course, Congress is at an all-time low. I mean, if I just looked from the outside, I would vote for an all-time low as well. But I think that you know the way to do it. I'm petrified with this committee, because I think if you have 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans, it's a prescription for deadlock.
Right.
And once there's deadlock, cuts kick in. And we don't know where they're going to kick in.
Well, defense, though. I mean, that was smart to put that in there, right?
Because it was very smart to put that in there. And, you know, I had to laugh because I was listening to some of the Republicans, both in the Senate and the House, whining about the defense cuts. And I'm saying, you know, to my staff, I said, isn't this wonderful? They're all for cutting except programs that they like.
But
my big fear is that when you come back and there are automatic cuts, if they can't agree, we're going to see Medicare. I know they're saying that the cuts are 2% and they're only on the provider side. But, you know, you can't cut the provider side. I think it's not going to affect the quality of health care for the consumer. It just has to. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I hear your concerns. I mean,
What,
go
if,
ahead,
what if three of the Democrats on this panel are Blue Dog Democrats? That's like three extra Republicans.
Well, I want to tell you, you're absolutely right, because I'm thinking that, you know, it's 6-6, so at best we're going to have deadlock. At worst, believe me, it's not going to be one of their six that's going to come over to us.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose anything, right, it'll be one of our six. And,
yeah,
and I just don't like it. I think that we lost a great opportunity. You know, Kathy Hochul in upstate New York,
yep,
as a Democrat, got elected in a special election. It was mostly a referendum on Medicare. I mean, she'll tell you that as well.
Right.
And I think when we talked, nuts and bolts and mentioned what it means to people in their lives, in their real lives, that we are the defenders of these social programs of Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid, I think people understand that they better vote for the Democrats, because we're going to preserve those programs.
Yep. Yep.
And we've lost that. It's hard now to make that case. We can still try, but it makes it that much harder.
Well, it's why we need more Elliot Engels in there fighting for us. Let's talk just before you go about the great moment last night. Of course, Gabrielle Giffords, your colleague, coming back. Did you get a chance to speak to her?
Oh, I did. I went over to her and I hugged her. And, you know, she was one of my really good friends. And one of my sons graduated from the University of Arizona in Tucson. And so I knew Gabby before she was even a member of the House.
Oh, wow.
I encouraged her to run for the House, in fact. We had a mutual friend that introduced us before she was a House member.
Wow. Huh.
And I encouraged her, and she sort of gave me some tips about the University of Arizona. My son was considering going there at the time and actually went there and graduated. So
wow.
She and I have always had this little special thing. And I said to her I was going to be in Tucson in a couple of months, and I would come over and see her. It's just amazing. People were actually hugging her and walking away crying. It was very emotional. I bet.
How'd she seem to you as someone that's known her for a long time? She seemed to be, really soaking it in.
She was soaking it in. She kept saying thank you. She didn't say much more than that. So I don't know, what her speech possibilities are. And I noticed that one of her hands was sort of not moving that much. But she clearly knew what was going on, and she voted.
Yeah.
It was just so good to see.
Yeah, and urged bipartisan cooperation. And you think, what a moment that she unannounced showed up like that. I mean, it really was awe-inspiring. I thought.
I want to tell you, before any of this happened, I always thought that she was one of the class acts of Congress. She
mm-hmm.
was just she is a very, very, very nice person, and I always enjoyed her company. And she was definitely a close friend of mine. And I even remember where I was when I heard the news. It was just awful, and we're glad that she's alive.
Yeah.
Hopefully she can take the long climb back.
Yeah, exactly. Well, pretty incredible for just 7 months ago. So at least a highlight yesterday. Representative Elliot Engel, thanks as always for your time. We so appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephanie. Oh. I really enjoy it.
All right. Thank you, sir. There he goes. All right. Nancy Pelosi yesterday about that.
But I can't think of any that is more special and means so much to our country than to witness the return of our colleague, who is the personification of courage, of sincerity, of admiration throughout the country. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords brings us...
And she was stopped by just a huge round of applause. Yeah.
Oh, all right, Judy in Chicago. Jim, it's for you. Hi, Judy.
Hey, Stephanie, I called yesterday. I was one of those crabby people.
Yes.
I wanted to call with a more polite suggestion.
Thank you.
That possibly agreeing with Paul Krugman is not mutually exclusive to supporting the president.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that just remember that, disillusioned progressives and Democrats plus voting rights attacks in the states equals low voter turnout equals Republican victory.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Let's get mad. Let's get even. Let's get these tea party
stealing votes
out.
Also.
Anne in Tucson, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show, speaking of Gabrielle Giffords. Hi, Anne.
Hi there.
Hi.
Listen, I was trying to get the name of the right-wing wacko who is local here in Tucson. And this morning, when I sort of listened for a second and a half, he said, wow, Gabrielle Giffords is back, and everyone was applauding and all that good stuff. But did she really know what she was doing?
Mm.
She's brain injured. How do we know that she has any...
Yeah, maybe they should try to invalidate her vote. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's like this brain injured person, you know, actually voting. Well, they're all brain injured, all those other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also wanted to say...
Whatever her state, it's functioning a lot better than most Tea Party members, in my opinion.
That's my opinion also.
Yeah, all right.
But I just wanted to say fast that I went and saw your show here in Tucson.
Yes.
And I sat next to you guys when you went before you went into to do the show.
Yes.
My friend and I were sitting right next to you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, Hal Sparks is right behind me. And I'm an old lady.
Yeah, right? So and you ovulated, right? All right. Thank you, honey.
I want to touch his leg.
Okay. All right, Andy. You little hussy. I'll be gone with you now. All right. 45 minutes after the hour. Right back with Right Wing World on The Stephanie Miller Show.
A whole new level of disturbing.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 50 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12. George in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, George.
Hey, Steph, great to talk to you.
Thank you.
There, you played a quote from Cantor before the top of the hour that's revealing of the Republican mindset and how they lie and spread falsehoods almost instinctively without thinking about it. He said, and I quote, I believe, that getting this town to change the way it spends the people's tax money is like trying to turn an aircraft carrier. Well, an aircraft carrier is a naval vessel, and its survivability is determined in large measure by its maneuverability. And while it can't turn on a dime like a destroyer or a frigate, U.S. Navy aircraft carriers are the fastest and most maneuverable big ships in the world. Perhaps a better metaphor would have been trying to get this town to change the way it spends the people's money is like trying to turn an oil tanker. But that would simply remind everybody
that
Republicans and the oil companies
work for.
One and the same.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. All right. And you know why he's made a bad analogy? Because Eric Cantor is a bitch face.
Eric Cantor's bitchface.tumblr.com?
Our new obsession.
Yay.
Just saying. All right, let's...
There's a fly in my mint julep. I said French cuffs.
It reminds me of a whinier like that teacher on South Park. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's dive into the right-wing world, shall we? Hey, Sean Hannity doesn't like it. There must be something good in this deal.
Well, this is why I admire the Tea Party and the conservatives.
Yes.
Because this is phony compromise. And when did standing on principle balanced budgets become such a crime that you've got to be called a hobbit and a draconian, a cutter that's throwing grandma over the cliff?
Because you are a hobbit throwing grandma over the cliff.
Because you want to eliminate the safety net.
Exactly.
You want to throw grandma off the cliff without a safety net.
Exactly. Yeah. Greg Gutfeld on the Five.
It always comes out of this, this polarization, defense versus domestic. The left always prefers to increase dependence through entitlements. That's why they want that's why they want domestic spending.
Yeah.
Whereas everybody else in America wants to increase the defense because that's how you preserve independence. It's about independence versus dependence.
They like dependence. And we like independence.
Hey, Pinhead, we are entitled to it because we paid into it our whole lives.
Moron.
It's not free money.
By the end of the show, we're just like spitballs and just...
Yeah. Greg Gutfeld's a tool.
Steve Doocy on Doocy and Doocy.
So is he.
America sees that there are two different paths going forward. One party
wants to
spend and the other wants to save. All right.
And one goes to the shining city on the hill and the other one goes, well, you know where.
We do.
The rich people go to the shining city on the hill and everyone else dies. That's their nirvana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eat your eye sockets and... holes, cat food, Grandma, and shut up.
Yeah, you'll like it.
Rush Limbaugh, my friend.
There's not going to be a default. That's another thing. We keep hearing this default because there will not be a default. Obama and Treasury already have a contingency plan to pay the bondholders, there isn't going to be a default. The correct way to categorize what would happen would be to say that it's a partial government shutdown. And those happen frequently.
He sounds like he's going to explode in any second.
It's by the end of the show, I don't even care if we're making cogent political points. Yeah. I just like when he mocks the way Russell
does. Mr. Creosote.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Better get back, I'm going to throw up.
That's what it sounds. You know, when you do this as much as we do, it's just that it is. It's like a wall of annoying sound. You have Eric Cantor.
And Russell. It's all variations of Charlie Brown's teacher. Seriously.
Charlie Brown's teacher moderates a debate between Eric Cantor and Rush Limbaugh.
Wow. That's... Wow.
The show is just descended into pure gibberish.
And then there's Mark Levin, who's sarcastic.
Ultra-right wing.
You missed my...
It's just a chorus of really annoying sounds on the right.
You missed my incredibly, it's the almost Krugman-esque analysis of the all the bills that the Republicans have passed in the House. Thralsome version. The president, Steven, did hate him. Canyon. Am I wrong?
You lie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. All right, Amy, some tea partier on Fox News.
You know what? I'm not satisfied at all with this. And as a matter of fact, I still think that things are going to come out. I mean, this is exactly why bills are supposed to be posted for 72 hours before they're voted on. We're sick and tired of things going on behind closed doors and then being crammed down our throats at the last minute. Last November, people sent new members to Washington because they wanted fundamental change as to how things were done. And this is not the fundamental change they wanted.
No.
They a teabagger just talking about someone shoving something down her throat.
Yeah.
Quit it! Stop calling me a teabagger!
Listen, once I get that image, I'm not coming back. Know. There's only a few minutes in
the
show.
Put on your lace panties and stop shoving things down my throat.
All tea.
Stop shoving this.
Oh, dear.
Okay, Glenn Beck.
I'm telling you, it's going to change lives.
Oh,
I don't know how. I don't know what's going to happen, quite honestly. But it's going to change lives.
But you can
it is a life-changing and, I think, planet course-altering event.
His Israel
and
rally.
I would invite you to join us, either physically or virtually. Find out all the details at glennbeck.com/Israel or gbtv.com. There's a possibility a pillar of fire appears.
What?
I mean, I think this could be miraculous.
Is that extra? Or no, you get the pillar of fire for the same...
Yeah, you
can
tell how serious it is because of the proximity to the microphone.
I think there's going to be a pillar of fire.
Glenn Beck needs to modulate a little
bit. All right, that concludes the most gibberishy right-wing world ever.
Well, you only made it that way. I mean, there were some, you know, evil points made in there, but...
I'm not in a mature mood.
I know.
Okay, hey, by the way,
what?
Most of, Newt Gingrich has been bragging about his Twitter, how many Twitter followers he has.
Yeah, he says he has like a million and a half or something.
They're like his wife's orgasms, they're fake.
Hi!
Woo!
Waka, waka, waka.
Yeah, he was complaining in the press yesterday. God, that's all they do. Whine. He was complaining about how big his Twitter audience is. He said, I have six times as many Twitter followers as all the other candidates combined, but it doesn't count. If the candidate, I'd still be a candidate. Since it can't be a candidate, that can't count.
Why is he sounding like Eric Cantor?
I don't know. If Newt is winning the Twitter primary, it's because of voter fraud. A former staffer tells us his campaign hired a firm to boost his follower count in part by creating fake accounts. Newt employs a variety of agencies whose sole purpose is to procure Twitter followers for people who are shallow, insecure, unpopular enough to pay for them. As you might guess, Newt is most decidedly one of the people to which these agencies cater. About 80% of those accounts are inactive or dummy accounts created by various follow agencies. Oh, boy. Another 10% real people who are part of a network of folks.
Frankly, look over there.
Who's paying for? Newt Gingrich has to pay for friends. I gotta go take a nap.
I'm not entirely sure all the ones that follow you are real, actually.
What? They are all real. Everybody tweet me now and tell me you're real.
Oh, God.
There it goes. It's
going
to explode.
Crystal Boy, Jim Ward, Rebecca Taylor. See you tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.